is out there,
but out there is very big.
You've never been good at finding things.
You once got lost in a boot.
Good. Hello. Oh, right. Hello and welcome to Johnny and the Baptists. Happiness is out there with me, Johnny Donohoe.
And me, Paddy Jervis, coming to you for today.
Right, nice. Good. Good intro there. So you've gone with the traditional use of some English.
and a little bit of Greek, way. Yeah.
Yeah. How are you doing, Paddy?
Oh, it's about time to take a sip. I'm okay. I'm ill.
About time. No, take a sip. Hey, this is all about mental health. Have a sip before you tell me. I'll cover.
Do 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 do.
Hey, Paddy, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm fine. What song was that? Because I thought you were gonna do. Why do birds suddenly appear?
I started singing before I knew what I was going to sing, and usually I find if you do that, you find yourself falling into a melody and going, oh, it's this. And in this case, I just didn't. Absolutely didn't become anything.
It's a good thing we're recording this, because that might turn into a hit.
I feel it won't.
Oh, well, I mean, but we are traditionally...
I could be wrong.
That's how we write most of our songs. So I'll chop it out later, and we'll use it on an album.
You're not answering my question.
Oh, I'm under the weather, and I'm finding it quite stressful. But it's fine. This is nice. But it's nice to see you. It's nice to see everyone.
Yeah, it's nice to chat. I'm in the kitchen again, and because I'm right beside the router, or as they say in America, the ready. And
hey, nice.
Thanks very much. And I've got the washing machine. I had the washing machine on behind me, and I've paused it so that it doesn't ruin the thing. But I'm going to say something. This is quite interesting. I don't know if it's interesting, but it's true. I'm washing my favorite toy. Which is also one of my kids' favorite toys. It's a panda, and her name is Peg. And I don't often talk about her, but she was given to me by my partner, MasterChef quarterfinalist Josie Long, a couple of months before our first child was born. And I sort of put all of the love and anxiety that I had into this little bear that's adorable.
Yeah.
And I gave it a big personality, and we talk. She comes with us on tour. Josie will attest to this. Both my kids love the panda, Peg. I love her more. Sometimes it's been considered worrying the amount that I need this panda, but I feel that, you know, as I've had more therapy and more medication, Peg the panda has featured less in my personal day-to-day narrative. And I decided, because she's never been washed, to put her on a delicate low wash in the washing machine, 20 degrees.
She's never been washed.
She's never been washed. Do you wash soft toys?
I think you're meant to. Especially, like, I mean, because Peg is sort of quite outdoorsy.
And very loved.
Very, very loved. And she's got a very sort of unusual stink.
Does she? You said she smells like the kids.
Yeah, but like, yeah, and all the things you'd associate with that, like, you know,
yeah,
like you know, that she's. I think she's had her fair share of sort of jam on her, and
she has had a fair. Yeah, that's true.
I'd be terrified to. Now I think about it, I wash my soft toys, which is interesting because. Benny said that I should wash Henry. Henry's my soft toy pig that I bring with me on tour. He's brilliant. She was like, oh, you should probably wash him every time you take him on tour. Like, you know, like, because we used to have him on stage as well.
Yeah. And Peg.
But then, well, I've washed him, and then she was like, oh, he smells different now. And now she doesn't like Henry as much. So I think you're meant to clean, you know.
I was thinking, well, it's only gonna take half an hour and then it's done. And then I remembered that I'm sitting right by the washing machine, so it's impossible to do that and what we're doing right now at the same time. So I've got to do one and then the other, which means it's a longer process than I'd hoped. She cannot be in the washing machine whilst the kids are in the house.
Right, okay, yeah.
Because I think that could be really distressing. It's already distressing enough for me, and I'm sort of a grown-up. And there is an extent to which she has become an anxiety pup.
Yeah.
You know, a sort of, what are they called? What are they, like those dogs that people have?
Like a therapy dog.
She's my therapy soft toy. I definitely think that's true. And I definitely think, you know, there was a point where I had over-relied on her. Perhaps, I mean, I'm not going to refer to this toy as it. It is her. And I'm uncomfortable with her being in the machine. And I'm also aware that that's probably not hugely sane, but at least I'm top of it.
I don't know. I sort of, I've teased you for Peg in the past, but in a loving way, because... Well, I mean, because you've got to give. If a soft toy comes with you everywhere, you've got to sort of give it a personality. And she's got like she has a voice that you do very well. I've sort of
hello.
Now,
Patty.
What's happening with this towel that you're cleaning yourself with as well?
I've got a slightly wet ear. I forgot that we're on video. Oh, I preferred it when we used to do this just audio, and I could clean my ears whenever I wanted. It's not my ears are clean. I've just had a bath, but they're slightly. I've still got a bit of slightly wet here.
Sort of a bit of Frent in there. Well, Peg, because Peg talks to me an awful lot. Peg sometimes talks to me when you want to broach a topic that maybe you don't want to talk about, and so Peg does it. But it's become a bit marred because I started saying that Peg was a Jehovah's Witness. And
you've been very cruel about it.
Yeah. No, it's quite fun because I need there to be a narrative beyond, oh, it's Johnny's breakdown toy. Like, so then I can talk to Peg as an individual who has her own, you know, her own quirks and personality. She's always selling me things. She's occasionally very rude to me when you're out of the room.
She is quite passive aggressive.
You don't believe me. Yeah.
Yeah, she is a bit passive aggressive. So facts about Peg. She is a very, very committed Christian. And also a lesbian, and she finds that hard to reconcile the two of them. She had an affair for a while with the hot owl that you put in the microwave for when you've got like a sore, a sort of a pain on your leg or something, and you can put it on it, so it's full of little beads.
Oh, sorry, the traditional medicinal hot owl we all keep.
Have you never had a... Everyone's got a hot owl. It's one of those little toys.
I've got a stone pig.
What? No, this is a hot owl. This is like an owl-shaped bean bag, and inside are these beans that get hot if you put it in the microwave, and it sort of works in the same way as like a hot water bottle, but it's hotter and shorter. So it's like like a compress. We've always had this. Josie uses it sometimes when she used it when she was pregnant a lot, and Peg fell in love with the hot owl.
Right,
they had a relationship, but it wasn't to be. Peg sought a lot of counsel from the church about that, and decided that she was never going to be able to reconcile her sexuality with her faith. And that they are two things that exist and are equally as important to her, and she is able to just live in a way that is you know, within God, but also within who she truly is. And
that's
to hell
fair,
with
yeah.
the priests. That's what she thinks.
Well, that's
so I've given her a complex narrative because I don't know.
I had that with I had Penguin. And Penguin was great, but I think through a conversation with a different stuffed toy, we discovered that Penguin was actually Sergeant Penguin, and he'd been conscripted when he was quite young, was trying to live as a normal penguin, but couldn't stop thinking about the war. That's why I've never given him a voice.
Well, I think you and I, when we create narrative, we immediately add sadness.
What was it you said about all Johnny and the Baptist songs earlier as well? You said something really funny yesterday about how all of our songs are basically could be summed up in one sentence, which is, how about this thing? Oh, look, an owl.
I'm definitely going to solve this problem. Oh, wait, that's a shiny duck. Yes. Yes, well, Peg came with Pig. They're two toys that came together, and they're best friends. And I guess Pig is sort of the id, and Peg is the ego or ego.
Right. Okay. Is that, and do you have a super ego? Is that the hot owl?
I've never really thought about that. But Pig's very sort of base. You know, he drinks out the toilet. Toilet's good enough for a pig.
Okay. So he's not fussy.
Peg's very sort of, he's not fussy, and Peg is very fussy, but they're best friends.
Peg, I've seen Peg's head turn 360 degrees before, and it was quite scary. Peg turns to me a lot if I say something that she doesn't like.
Yes, I've seen that.
Yeah, because pops out of your bag on the train. I don't think I've ever introduced her to Henry. I think one of your daughters might have done. It's very sweet that your daughters remember the names of my stuffed toys, which I think is a really... Aww. I would not expect one of my friends to do that for a very long time, but they always ask if Henry's there whenever I arrive.
Well, my eldest daughter has about 300 soft toys, which is a problem.
Yeah.
That I can't control. Because Josie keeps buying them. Whilst that's true, she has named every one, and she never forgets one. And if you try and hide some, because you're trying to scheme it down to say 100 soft toys, which is still unmanageable, she'll be like, where's Penguin? Where's Penguin and Ham Ham? And you're like, oh, jeez.
Christ. Oh, I put one of them in the fridge. I do like Peg, and I've got, do you remember I found that gif of Peg on WhatsApp of Peg twerking, and it really upset
there is
me.
I didn't like that. In fact, let's not even talk about that. There's a, because Peg is an IKEA panda, and they sell these sort of little pandas. Part of the advertising for IKEA was that panda being manipulated to dance, and I didn't like it. It was too sexual.
Yeah. it was a different time in her life is what we sort of worked out. She did it for the money.
There's lots of things we do for money.
I don't think that's very true. Well, I feel Pig's narrative is sort of underdeveloped, I think, or it's underrepresented, maybe.
Oh, it's a busy narrative, but he's often Pig was for a very long time writing his first novel.
Yeah, it was a sort of a Churchill fictional biography, right?
It was sort of a semi-autobiographical story of a heroic wartime leader pig. But unfortunately, when he delivered the manuscript, it turned out to just be a box of onions. Because he can't read or write, and he didn't realise sort of really what a book was. He'd just been telling his story to these onions. So that was really
and
sad.
And his editor was another pig who was having a lovely time with these onions.
His editor and literary manager is Peg. And a lot of the blame needs to lie with her on that.
Yeah, no, that is fair. Did you have a stuffed toy growing up that you remember the name of?
Yes, I had a hedgehog called Huff.
That's great.
Yeah.
I like that.
And I think a lot of the problems I realize stems from I had a soft toy that I loved that was lost, shall we say, for the sake of this narrative, that was lost. Yeah, yeah. That was lost. A parent chose to lose on my behalf. Yes. And I never quite got over that trauma. And so when I got Pig and Peg, perhaps I put too much into them.
did Huff have a voice? Or no. was Huff a
didn't
silent?
Didn't even have legs. So I'm trying to describe. So Huff was, if you imagine a hedgehog, so he had a... he wasn't very hedge. I mean, he was hedgehogular in some ways, I guess. He had a little little nose, little pointed nose, and little thing, and then he had a sort of soft but spiky top. But then underneath, he was completely flat, and there were no little legs. So he was sort of like a little, like a half a rugby ball. Yeah, but he wasn't heavy.
Yeah.
And that was just the design of this particular hedgehog. And so he didn't have any legs and he just slid. And I loved him. I took him everywhere. In fact, there's all photos of me from like that age are with him under my arm.
That's lovely. I mean, that's...
But then he got in some milk.
Did you wash him? He got in
some milk and then he was washed and he was never really fully recovered.
That's because you've got to be careful with washing them.
And then he got thrown away. So, but not by me. And I never recovered from the sadness. But that's the trick to living a long life, is to hold on to things. Don't process
until your heart explodes. Yeah.
Did we talk about this last week? Because I read this article that, and stop me if this is what last week's episode was about or the week before. But I read this article that often when people at the end of their life develop vascular dementia or Alzheimer's or something, some sort of form of age-related senility, they start to live in the moments of trauma that are unprocessed and undealt with, you know. So and I did we talk about this before on the podcast?
Now, we've either talked about this on the podcast or together at some point, and I'm not sure which. So why don't you try and make it sort
I'll make it quick.
You could just lie about it. You could change it up.
I could change it so that it's definitely different. Well, this is what I read something, and then I was told about it, and then I looked it up and read about it. And if that's true, and it does seem true, because when my grandmother had, when she was about in about 1996, so she'd have been 80 or so, she had some sort of accident. She had a fall outside the hairdresser's, and she broke her leg. She went to hospital. When she woke up, she had very advanced dementia, which the doctor said was Alzheimer's, but she hadn't before. She'd just been a bit scatty. Now, there's two possible things. One, she maybe had some sort of oxygen loss during the operation. She's a very old person, having a general anaesthetic to reset her leg, very possible. Another is that the sort of the trauma of the fall moved her dementia on significantly and suddenly. I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to try and guess what it was, but this is what happened. She went into her home, and every time I saw her then, she would say the same, "They're taking my baby, they're taking my baby." I'm holding a sort of thing. And no one had ever talked to her. She'd never talked about this, but she was an older mum. So she married my grandfather when she was about, I think like 30, which for 1945 was older. And she then had kids immediately. But she'd had this life before him, and I've got no way of knowing this ever now. But he assumes that because she grew up an Irish Catholic in Glasgow and Stranraer in Scotland, and sometime in Ireland as well, but mostly Stranraer and Glasgow. That she probably had a baby out of wedlock in her teens that was taken away. And no one knew this at all. Not a single person in her history. She'd never told her the person she went on to live with for the next 60 years, 50 years, however long. Yeah, 50 years. She never told. And there was no way of asking other members of her family, because she was the eldest of four girls, five, can't remember. She was the eldest of a number of kids. And so when it happened, it's not like the other siblings can be like, "Oh yes, I remember that," because they were possibly a bit too young. So I sort of worry. I mean, this is a very sad story for her. And she was very much stuck in that moment. Now, sometime later, she was stuck in a different moment, I remember. But I remember thinking, gosh, that's so much unprocessed trauma that she was sort of stuck with when she wasn't able to communicate really with the outside world, is essentially, I guess, the root of every nightmare. You know, being in that moment is kind of hellish, isn't it? You know, it's a very unfair award for someone who hasn't led an unkind life, which is definitely true.
Yes, yeah, precisely.
And so I'm coming around to the point, which is essentially, if nothing else, get therapy. Because if that's true, fuck me, you don't want that. And I think I think that's my new advertising technique for therapy, which is whether that there's just a small possibility that that is true, and that's enough to make you need to deal with your trauma right now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Before it's too late. Yeah, I'd hate to get trapped in. Jesus Christ. I mean, that's pretty heavy, isn't it?
It is, isn't it?
I mean, to balance the books on that, I think I've already told all of my sad ones about people on their deathbed and what their last things were. My mum's last words were tackety boots.
Yes.
Which my dad worked out was the sound of, I think, her father's or grandfather's, but her dad was a window cleaner, and he wore these boots that would like clip onto the ladder or something. So when he came home from work, she'd hear the tackety because they go tackety 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 when he walked into the house and put his ladder up by the thing.
So that's what she was saying.
Tackety boots, tackety boots. Yeah, which is like quite a nice thing.
It is, yeah.
And it's better that I obviously won't name them, and you'll understand why in this story. But a friend of mine, when their grandfather died, he was still completely compos mentis, and they were in hospital with him. She was sat by his bed. I want to get this story correct, but it's roughly this. He turned and went, I think I'm going to die very soon. And she was like, oh, no. Da-da-da-da-da. And he went, so I must inform you, I'm a spy. And then died. And it turned out to be 100% true.
What? I don't know this. Sorry, you said this is a friend of ours. No, it's I don't know this person.
No, I mean I'll tell you about it later because of the interest of complete anonymity. You can't tell me.
Yeah.
But it's one of those stories that you're just like, oh, like, and then you know, and then sort of you know, the other parent comes back. You know, is he gone? Yeah, he's gone. And also, I think we might need to go and look at his house. Like,
My God. And amazing. He was a spy. That isn't just... Because that's a very funny joke.
He was something incredibly, incredibly secretive. And it just kept it, you know, never mentioned it, of course. And then was like, this is the last chance for me to tell you. I am going to tell you and then die.
And was he telling his granddaughter?
Yes, I believe so.
And but was his partner still alive and his wife?
I'm not sure.
Did anyone else know, I suppose? Was it like he told her and they were all like, I'm afraid that is true. Yes, he worked for the KGB. I assume it's the other side.
I think it was then looked into and it was like, oh, yeah, this is what his life was. And I'm not sure if anyone else knew. It's just one of those things. You know, when someone tells you a story and then you're like, oh, fuck, all right. I've met quite a few spies. I come across a lot of spies.
What? No, you shouldn't. Because if you have met someone and they've told you they're not a spy, then they're not. Like, that's their thing.
I've met a retired... a very retired old head of a major military intelligence organization. And that was quite an experience because they still have to be protected in the same way they used to. It's absolutely wild. I don't think I could
tell
any stories.
Was this at a dinner with Annie Lennox and Frank Sinatra?
It was Ruby Wax.
I'm starting to tire of this stream of endless celebrity anecdotes that come out of you on this podcast.
Oh, I had something to ask you about that's completely unrelated.
Yeah.
What happened to your hand? Because I can see you on camera.
I'll tell you about the hand. I'll tell you about the hand in just a moment. But first, I wanted to finish this because I stayed in London last weekend with my eldest daughter, who's five, with her best friend and their parents. So her best friend is a little girl who is just absolutely lovely. She's called Lyra. I think I can say that because I'm not sharing any information about where she lives or who she is. Well, I said she lives in London, but that's probably, I still feel okay about that. And we stayed with her parents in their home. Anyway, her mum, who's just a lovely person, I really enjoyed spending time with. She said when her mum died, the last thing she said to her dad was, she looked at him, and they were very happily married, by the way, and she said, "You never gave me a laundry room. I asked so many times."
Oh, God, but that'll stay with him, won't it?
Yeah. But apparently she also, in the last sort of hours of her life, started saying things like, "The only way to clean the hob is with lemon juice. If you use anything else, it'll rust." And all those commercial cleaners we buy, just no good on it because it's quite old. And then she said, "I've never found anyone who can get into this corner. So you have to do it yourself." And I was like, "Well, there's something quite sweet about being like, well, this has to continue. Come on."
Yeah, I've got to safeguard all of these bits just to be sure. Yeah. Oh, that's very, very sweet.
Shall I tell you about my finger before we end the podcast?
Yeah, tell me about your weird finger.
Okay, so I've got, if you're just listening to this and you want, I'll put it up to the camera if you want to see. I've just got a makeshift sort of plaster on it, because I couldn't find any plasters. So this is actually just some kitchen roll over the thing and then some masking tape, which I know isn't
right.
Whatever it's called, antibacterial or whatever it is that a plaster has. But it's only temporary. It was just because it was really bleeding. And I've already washed it, and I'll wash it again. I'll try and spray it with something if I can find it. When I'm anxious, and this is true, and it is a problem, when I'm very anxious, and I was very anxious yesterday, when I'm anxious, I bite my... not my nails, but my cuticles. I bite my fingers and I pick them with my thumb, and then until they bleed, which is annoying. I wish I didn't do it. And I've tried really hard not to do it, but I do it without noticing. And the reason I was anxious yesterday was a lot of things. My partner is away for five or six nights on tour coming up right now. So I've got the kids on my own. I've got a lot to do. The house was a real state. We've got so much work on, but also I think the main problem, and really this is an interesting one, I was just exhausted. It's just been nonstop work and lots of traveling and lots of things. And I was just so, so extremely tired. And last night I realized, well, I am anxious. So what do you do? So I did a lot of cleaning, which I found incredibly helpful because basically it's physical. It was producing a result that would make me feel less anxious, which is good. But it's also really physical labor. They said go for a run, which I was absolutely not going to do, but I was quite sweating from like hoovering and mopping and doing everything, so that was quite good. Actually did some physical activity, and much better than just slobbing in front of the TV for me that last night. But I also think that there's a flip side to that. If you get anxious and you start cleaning, you can get into a cycle of being too clean, you know, of like constantly cleaning. I am not in danger of that, and that's why this is okay for me. I just want to make that clear for anyone who's like, oh, well, you've got to be careful about that because you can end up, you know, using cleaning as a way to guard your anxiety and then it makes you more, there's no chance of that. I'm such a fucking mess. So I think that was, and I didn't wake up this morning being like, I'll do more. I was like, well, that's done for a month. So that's not a problem. But because I was sort of biting everything before I'd noticed and was able to sort of stop myself, I realized I've got this big cut on my finger, you know, where there should be skin. And while I was talking to a friend earlier, I just hit it into the door frame of the front. My friend was walking out the door and I just hit it into the, what we call the snib here in Scotland, you know, the bit that goes into the thing that makes it lock. And it just bled profusely. And I thought, that's so unlucky that I've got a slight kind of injury. And then I hit that exact injury. And then it occurred to me, whenever I have some sort of injury, I then end up hitting it all day. And then I realized is that I'm actually just very clumsy. So I'm always hitting some part of me all day long. It just happens if you're already injured somewhere, then because you're always injuring yourself, you're always going to be re-injuring yourself. So that's all it is.
Oh, mate.
Does that answer your question, Paddy? I feel that was a long answer.
It answers my question. Not only does it answer my question, I have the same thing because I'm clumsy boy. I'm a Jervis, and I've got a cut on top of my finger that's probably been there for, I'd say, 6 months. And I was trying to work out why it won't heal, and it's because whenever I do the washing up, when I put the stuff in the little rack, then whenever I do a chopping board, it goes at the back, and so I have to lift it over the stuff, and I hit the top of the little the sort of cupboards with my hand every time, and it reopens that cut every time I do the washing up. I hit my hand on that thing and go, oh bollocks. And I've got a scab on my shin. It's because we have this fucking bed, this really nice, comfortable bed, right? That when we moved in, we were like, that is a fancy bed. That's really, it's very modern. It's like low set. It's like a wooden sort of box, but it looks very stylish. And it's like low set mattress. It's very cool. We're like, oh, a fancy bed. And it turns out that the sharp corners of this wooden box are precisely at shin height. And every time I walk round the bed, and I'm on the far side of the bed, I got to walk past two corners to get into bed.
Sure.
So I bought some of those things that you got when you got kids that are like, you know, those things you put on sharp corners,
soften the edges,
hitting their eyes on them. I put those on, but it's still quite hard. So that bruises but doesn't cut. So what I do is I cover it with the duvet to be like, ah, that'll cushion the blow. But that makes you forget that it's there. And then you hit it because you're like, oh, that's going to be soft. And so this will never heal, I think I've come to the conclusion of. And because I'm anxious, I scratch at it when I'm doing nothing.
I mean, there's probably a solution. But it...
Different bed.
A different bed, but it's I think what you know, this really what I discovered, because I left London and moved to Glasgow, as regular listeners will know, which means I graduated from a one bedroom flat for all my family to quite a large place just because of the economy of scale living up here. And I think the trouble with living in too small a space for a human being, as is the case, at many people living in a flat, because, you know, the world is fucked and rich people steal everything, is that, I just was constantly injured walking around my old flat because I couldn't navigate it successfully without hurting myself.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't. And when I came back to London this week, I realized that I was doing it again, that I'd really missed... I'm dyspraxic, and so I think I have a problem with some physicality, generally anyway. That's why I've always got food down me. Because I try and tell people it's the kids, but it's not. And the problem is soon they're going to stop being at the age of making a mess, and also at the age where they're like, we know that you tell people this. And also, like, I wear clothes in London when I go down to work. By the end of the day, they've got soup down them, and the kids haven't seen it. So, like, you know, I'm giving myself away. But I just don't walk into shit as much, and it's really been a huge relief. And the solution, Paddy, is to make a lot more money. So
thanks for joining us. That's the takeaway from this fucking week.
No, it isn't. But it is very unfair to make people live in shoeboxes, because that's not how humans have ever lived. We're not that kind of, you know, we might have had, I mean, it's funny that people call early prehistoric humans cave people, because apparently most humans never lived in caves, but they would live in large shelters they would spend a huge amount of time outdoors, like most of the time outdoors. And humans, as in the way that you sort of track like a hedgehog over the course of one night, will have a den, a place, but it will forage anything up to 4 kilometers away where it lives. So it's doing a huge amount of, like humans, again, we cover a huge amount of land. We don't suit being in a box all day and all night. That's not, we're just not that kind of animal. And if you live in a shoebox in London, and that's your place of work and your home, and you don't have any money to do anything else. That is an example of late stage capitalism literally fucking you. That's not what you've evolved to do.
Yeah. But if I work, you know, 16 to 18 hours a day, I can afford some cotton wool to pad out the box.
No, not with the price of cotton wool these days.
Yeah, no, it's skyrocketed since Brexit.
All right, well, look, we're going to go over to Patreon and do the second half of this podcast. If you listen to this and you'd like to join us on Patreon, well, there's a variety of things that we now do. We're 4 episodes into our hilarious cookery odyssey, which is Jamie Oliver's Johnny the Baptist 15-minute Jamie Oliver, I can't remember what it's called.
Like that. It's really good, isn't it?
It's really good. And then there's all our videos, blah, blah, blah. We love you. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye. Love you. Bye.
If happiness is even real, then finding it is not for you. But it's never too late to give up. Everyone will only let you down. What doesn't kill you will hurt you. Do you really want to take the risk? What goes up must come down. So maybe stop going up altogether. What goes around comes around. So why not just stay in your chair forever? Chair is safe.